Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Hello, Mr. Sports Jedi Kev.
What's going on? Piquiriqui, salute.
Salud a todo el mundo, bendición, buen provecho y guía bien. Welcome to another collaboration of Cuquito Underground with BS Jedi Sports Network. So this time, we're going to do What If Season 2, Episode 1, 2, and 3, because it's actually getting better than the first one. But to kind of collaborate here, what is your memories? I'll tell everyone right now, the memories of the first season of What If were very interesting, that we saw a little bit of Maria Carter. We saw the downfall of the Supreme Strange, or just Strange Evil, if you want to call him that. We saw the rise of Marvel Zombies. We saw the continuation of what would happen if Ultron got Vision's body and became Perfect Ultron. The Guardians of the Multiverse were born. The Black Widow that lost her world found a new one from episode 2 when Ant-Man killed everybody because he lost hope. It was all a cluster of numerous things. And of course, Killmonger betrayed because Killmonger betrays. Now we're in season 2. Now, what was your expectations so far before we get to episode 1, Mr. Kevin?
I wanted to see what if more other realities, because they expanded on mine first and foremost. When, like you said, like you mentioned about Black Widow, and that didn't have a world. We also saw different things with multiverse teases. You know, the evil Doctor Strange. What if Ultron would have worn the body? So you know me and us as outside watchers of Marvel. Can they bring the X-Men? Can they bring the mutants? Will they talk about the celestial beings, the Eternals? Those are those type of things. What if? I wanted to see if they were addressing that. And also, I like the outbreak situation with the zombies. I wanted to see more of that in season 2. And I'm looking forward to it with those expectations.
Yes. And as we know, it's been confirmed they're going to go on more from the Marvel Zombies episode and do a Marvel Zombies series. So we're going to see probably what happened when Spider-Man, the head of Ant-Man, and one-legged Black Panther would go over there. Or because of Chadwick Boseman dying and everything else, they probably all right, we're just going to do a parallel universe of Marvel Zombies where it was sort of the same, but we'll just take out some characters here and there and work it out, which Disney can do. But ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do now is talk and just do a general breakdown of episode by episode, first act and second act, basically, of episode 1, which is basically called, and I have it right here, What If Nebula Joined the Nova Corps? Now, this was based off basically the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie and a little bit of Avengers, the first one. Now, we know that Ronan was tasked to get the Power Stone. He didn't know really what it was, but he knew he had to get it. He was jealous of Thanos, and Thanos being a big boy is like, shut the hell up, do your job, get out of here. In this universe, Ronan betrayed Thanos and killed him. And in the doing so, left Nebula to die in space. In this universe, Nova Corps, Nova Prime, found her floating in space and inducted her into the Nova Corps. She took the oath. Basically like a refugee finding a new home. I found a new home. I respect them. They respect me. So I'm going to take the oath 100%. And by the way, this is very end of watch. By the way, if anyone hasn't ever seen that movie with, I forgot, Jake Gyllenhaal and the other guy, I forgot what his name was too. Great movie, end of watch. They actually bring up that reference as well later on in the movie. At the same time, Ronan was going to Nova Prime, obviously, to get the stone, because the stone was there, a la Guardians of the Galaxy 1. They had no other choice but to do a failsafe where they would put up a planetary shield that would last 50 years. No takebacks, no nothing. So by the time Ronan got there, the shield got up, and they were enclosed. They were safe. There was no power in the universe that could destroy that shield for 50 years. Now, the Civil War started. Strife happened. 5 years has passed. Nebula is still the Nova Corpsman. No one really respects her because she was in the Black Hand. They call her Black Hand Trash because she was in the Black Hand, obviously. The episode starts where she sees a familiar person, but dead, and that's Yondu. Yondu is dead on the floor. Don't really know what. No record comes in. Ah, this was a quick, easy out. Vengeance, whatever. We're just gonna call it. That's it. Yeah, that's it. And they take it away. And I did like this episode before we cut off right there. That Nebula went back and made a good point. Most people would look for the killer's weapon, but I would look for the victim's weapon, which was Yondu. So she went back, looked around, and since she actually talked to Yondu before she went to Nova Corps, she had video memory of her. Because again, we find out something later about her. We'll say it's something else, but she's a cyborg with something more than that. She takes out the recording. The recording does have Yondu whistling, which is his power. Finds the special arrow that he uses. She grabs it, and the arrow has a specific plan that she doesn't know what it is. From that point, Mr. Kevin, what was your thoughts on the episode?
Well, as I'm watching the episode, yeah, I felt like this was a mashup of other movies and series, like a little Blade Runner, like you mentioned, her being a detective, kind of. And if you listen to it, I was listening to it earlier. It don't do it blatantly where you're like, oh.
Yeah.
If you look into the music, there's a little Black Knight Batman in it. A little bit in the. I'm like, whoa, a little Batman-ish detective situation. She's trying to figure it out. So I appreciate it. A little crossover with DC or getting us involved, similar to we're going to talk about it as we review the other few episodes, which I really appreciate of this season too. We'll get to that a little later, but watching Nebula using her a detective skill and she had that recording of her interacting with Yondu. She goes, find one of my fondest memories with Yondu, although we didn't and see eye to eye or we worked together. And of course you hear him, of course, how did he, like you said, the weapon he uses whistle, and that same whistle tone brings the arrow towards her. So, and when she receives the arrow, that's what sets up for the next part of our breakdown of stage two with the arrow. What's in that message?
Exactly. And as we continue on, she goes to a shady bar down in Nova Prime, down in Nova, and enlists the help of someone that has been popping up a lot, and that's Howard the Duck. Howard the Duck here is just a bar owner, bartender, kind of a shady businessman. Always talking in hypotheticals, always putting that out there. She shows Howard the plans. He doesn't know what the hell it is. Guest starring Korg out of nowhere. He knows what it is. He's like, yeah, this is this. Oh, I'm not just a pretty face, you know. By the way, they gave a crap load of money or a lot of incentive for Taika Waititi because he was in almost every episode. I was telling my girlfriend that a couple hours ago. I'm like, this is freaking nuts. But I digress. You find out what it is, that is the source code for the planetary shield. So she goes to the jail, breaks out a Kree soldier named Yongrog, and he's a hacker. So they go on an adventure to go down to the system, go down to the sewers, and try to at least break the code to break the shield, because she finds out that somebody is breaking the code. Obviously, during that time, Nova Prime called her and said, hey, put me on a secure channel. Like, someone's trying to break the shield, and under any means necessary, find out who it is. Nebula. That's a pretty, pretty specific point that we have to remember that. So we go back, they go in the water, they break the code, they go to the planetary shield core. We find out that she is an Omega level cyborg. Mm-hmm. Just as it maybe even in terms of Omega level mutant, because I was telling myself she's a cyborg. The water's filling up. She's not going to drown. She's just all metal anyway, almost all metal. So she should be fine. We find out about that. And what happens when Yongrog is trying to betray him? He betrays her, downloads the data, takes it and leaves. She gets out and everything, and then finds out. And what we see here, and again, ladies and gentlemen, in the second part of the episode, we find out the real person behind it is actually Nova Prime. 5 years has passed. She can't deal with the strife of the city. She can't deal with the civil unrest. She made a deal with Ronin. Ronin will come in and do what Ronin does, which is wipe out anything in the name of the Kree Empire. And she'll take control of it. Obviously, Nebula tries to fight back. that asshole from the Marvels movie, the one that Campbell Daniels beat up, is there too. He's been there a couple times. I don't want to bring him up because he's kind of just whatever. They beat her up. And when they're about to do the finishing blow, she escapes, jumps out of the water, do the waterfall. They cut to finding that Howard the Duck and Korg and Groot is there too, by the way, just hanging out there. They actually call him rock, paper, scissors. That's pretty cool. And they actually help her. She needs guns. I did like how Howard said, even if we had heavy guns, and I mean military guns, heavy, heavy stuff, even if we had it, I mean, do you think we can help you? Like, they'll take your liquor license away. All right. And then all the guns came out. Let's just, rock, paper, scissors, let's go. So they go on the adventure. It's a breaking point. They all go on an adventure. They go together. They go to the point, and they think the bad guys think they won, but Nebula did a triple cross. And we find out that, as we said, when Nova Prime told her that any means necessary finished, do the mission, she knew that something was wrong. Nebula had an oath. Follow the light, do the light, and always be true. As if she was a rookie. And she had rookie mentality as a cop in LA. You do not, at any circumstances, do dirty stuff in order to do right. You can bend the law a little bit, hanging out with Howard the Duck, obviously, but you don't compromise the mission. That's what I loved about that. Fight ensues, back and forth, Howard the Duck and Groot. Korg does Hulk smashes on the two Kree guards. It's pretty cool. Groot says, I am Groot. In the end, Nova Prime and Nebula fall off a couple things. And even when Nova Prime is about to die, she saves her. And the only thing that Nova Prime says back at her says, you've ruined everything. Shoots. And because of that, she lets go. And a la Die Hard, we'll talk about that in a second, goes all the way down and dies. The shield is open. And at the same time, I did like that when they opened the shield and Ronan was coming in, Nebula betrayed her, triple crossed her, and then killed Ronan. That's all you had to do. Well, I'll talk about that in a second. Everyone's happy. They call in her supernova now. And business is back to normal. You got your liquor license. I'm happy. Let's go. I'm out of here. Check it. And they leave. And the episode ends right there with, when you're trying to follow the light, just follow it and you'll get to the end. I did love how the Watcher was saying that. So what were your thoughts on this episode, Mr. Kevin?
Yeah, with the episode, I like, because we forgot to mention that Drax was in the casino as they showed him, you know. So they all seem to find that world as a refugees world, where we saw some of the Guardians there. Also Groot, well, like you mentioned. I like the fact that Howard the Duck felt like a kingpin or a penguin, you know, Oswald Cobblepot, running the underground, you know, world, which was cool. Again, I know it's a different universe, but we are talking about comics and I like to mix them together. So everyone's like, oh, enough with the Batman references. Well, just hear me out. And then bringing that together and seeing, like you said, if you walk in the light, you're gonna, you know, the way the Watcher mentioned, it sets up a good what if Nevia did join the Nova Corps, and what if and I love that they got rid of Roland, like you said, why not? And I thought the same thing. All right, why did Nova Corps just betray Roland and just have him come in, hey, I'm opening, and then cut and end a story. But it was it meant a good one, a good storyline there. Everyone has a dark side. I got out of that, even Nova Corps, because we saw them when we saw Guardians of the Galaxy. They were the whole Heidi, you know, righteous, you know, good guys of the galaxy, and then they became a little. And in this, what if there's darkness in them? You know, of being stuck 50 years, you know, knowing that you're going to be 50 years confined, and following only 5 years have gone by, and then the whole world went haywire. I mean, it made a good story. I really enjoyed the first one there. At the end, when she puts on the Yondu, I guess it's the antenna receiver, so she could control the arrow. That was a pretty nice ending to it. And you know what? Everyone there, from Howard the Duck, I like to sit, like you said, the rock, paper, scissors gang with the other creature with the knives. I loved it. That was a really good introduction for episode one and season two. And if I say, you know what, this is going to be a good season, you know, with the very first one, sets the tone.
And that's my thoughts on this episode. This was a very good crime drama, for the fact that when you watch a lot of Law and Order, ladies and gentlemen, you kind of get the fact of it. And you knew, like, I knew something was up after watching it the second time, and then hearing Nova Prime saying any means necessary. I'm like, Like, this girl's through and through. Like, she's like, I'm not trash. I'm like, I'm no record. I did the job as everyone, like everybody else. So I knew something was up, and but Nebula's not stupid. Nebula is a daughter of Thanos. So they don't just play dumb. They act dumb just because they get you. And I love that. So in that sense, it was a good, solid episode. And this could set up, again, for the future. This was 5 years. So between Guardians of the Galaxy and 1 and 2, this could connect to Ego. This could connect to other things. Now Thanos is gone. So there is no threat for the Avengers. Therefore, there could be another big bad that can come out of nowhere, like Ego. Because I guess Ego is a very big thing this season. I'm looking at it. Now we move on to episode 2, which is, what if Peter Quill attacked Earth's mightiest heroes? Now, this started off, and a lot of people said the same thing, like, oh, it's a freaking Saiyan pod. Like, no, it's not a freaking Saiyan pod, first off. A Saiyan pod lands... Oh, my wrong one. Sorry about that. It's this one. There we go. No, sorry about that. Yes. There we go. Now, a pod lands around the East Coast, and they automatically say, shoot it. It hits it and nicks and lands it. It lands around, as you can see right here, and around a populated area. Got a comment here going up. You go, hey, Jedi, how are you? Are you living right now? Merry Christmas 3 days later. Happy 4 New Year's early.
Yes, we are live. And elite salute.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, ma'am. Have a great day. When they get there, then we find and we understand what's happening. It's Peter Quill. And this is basically the same thing as the story of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Yondu, as Yondu 1 does, was giving children to Ego. And right. After a while, was really not liking it. And at the point of time, he would keep Quill for himself and raise him like a father. But in this universe, he said, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to give him the money and do what you want to do. That also means that the Ravagers find out, and he still gets exiled. So he takes that to the grave to himself. He doesn't find redemption and goes back into the Ravagers. I like that little tease there. The son, the father's like, the father automatically destroys his Walkman, and then's like, hey, here's some energy. Play with this. Try to speed up the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 moment when him and we're throwing the ball back and forth. We cut to now, Hank Pym is hanging out with his daughter. Peggy is hanging out with now Howard. It's in the 80s. This is before, as I say right now, before Winter Soldier, because obviously it's the 80s and he's still alive. I want to put that out there. Peggy tells Howard, we have people that can help us. We just got the call on his team. They call Hank. Hank is trying to introduce potato chips as a vegetable to Hope. Hope is like, I'm not stupid. This is not vegetables. This is potato chips. This also ramps up with Ant-Man, because we find out that Ant-Man's wife is gone. So that means they did the mission. She's in the quantum realm. So that's immediately after quantum realm, and he just has to be a father by choice. They tell him to look on the television. Quill is right now down in the Eastern Seaboard having fun. By the way, a nice little Easter egg as well. Peggy and Howard were in Project Pegasus on the Western Shield front, which is another nod to the Western Avengers. We'll put that out there. On the West Coast, need people. Now, as this is happening, and again, this is really crazy, we see some great team up. We see Goliath from Ant-Man and the Wasp. We see King T'Chaka from the king that was with Captain America in the 40s, that was King T'Chaka's dad. This King T'Chaka before King T'Challa. We see that Gorbachev in the USSR has helped the services and enlisted the Winter Soldier, which is just like prime 80s Winter Soldier. Like, oh, and pick. And I did love that little add-on that everything just went slow. Like, oh, that's what I'm talking about. That's Winter Soldier. So they all have a plan. They're gonna go to where he is, the carnival, and try to attack the alien. So up to this point, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, and going back and showing everyone coming in, attack of Earth's mightiest heroes. They're showing a shield. If you look at that, that was from Ant-Man. When remember when he quit Shield, like you said, and he punches where the Howard. Director Howard and he quit and it jumps right to that because of we all know Peggy along with Howard Stark and so forth. They bring on and they make S.H.I.E.L.D. Remember and around that time of the timeline, if you remember, in a couple of years from there is when Winter Soldier kills Maria Starks. So that they're playing into that as well because that the timeline wise, and I'm like, oh, good. There's a lot of cohesions with the movies. Wait, you know, and like, oh, I really appreciate that. And seeing Quill come on to Earth, similar to the way he did in that movie in the second Guardians of the Galaxy. Okay, they're bringing into it, but he's a kid. And it makes you think, what if he really wanted a kid that wanted to kind of see where he came back from? And also Hope. They show Hope there with her father, showing that dynamic, feeding the chips. So it was a lot of callbacks, a lot of the movies that we've seen. And of course, like you said, King T'Challa, his father was there as the Black Panther. That's another good homage. So I'm like, okay, this is something that you're talking with a little bit of animation movies with the movies that we've seen already when Ant-Man. I'm like, all right, I like how the story goes. I like how they're going to go team up. But the only thing I wanted to say was Ant-Man was in San Francisco when they sent him, we'll get the jet ready. So it kind of like, okay, I guess they get the jet ready to go all the way across to Coney Island. Yeah. So that's also another one that I like because he went to Coney Island. He's from Missouri, I believe. Out of all the places, he chose Coney Island. So that was cool. And I also like that Peggy recognize Bucky immediately as soon as he came out as the Winter Soldier. I mean, like, oh, damn. That was also another good moment there to bring that whole storyline there. So, you know, Captain Rogers is still in Peggy's mind. Was it 40, 50 years later? So that was pretty cool, too.
Also, a nice little Easter egg that Dr. Wendy Lawson, who is the pilot for Carol Danvers.
I forgot about
also that there, too. But this is a nice little other little alternate life that she had, that there was no explosion, there was no Carol Danvers to be there, therefore there was never a Captain Marvel. So at one point she did, again, she's, oh, this is the Kree spaceship. They're like, huh? Like, yeah, it's a long story, I'll tell you guys later, because that's what they mean. Like, they just went somewhere else and she stayed there, and okay, sure. But that's the only part I didn't like. They didn't really explain what the hell did she do. And what did you come back? The Kree doesn't just give you a ship and that's it. So something happens where you either took the ship but she doesn't have any powers like Captain Marvel. It's a whole other thing. They get to the carnival, right? King T'Chaka is saying, this kid just doesn't seem that like harmless. And another person says, this coming from a guy who hides a technological marvel behind a third world country. You're talking? Okay, you know what? Third point. I give you that. All right, that's cool.
Touché.
That's the touche. Ant-Man uses his ants to direct him to a certain point. The T'Chaka tried to. This was, I don't know. This is, by the way, anyone who's watching who's a true X-Men fan, the Peter Quill reminded me of Xavier's son. If you remember back in the cartoon, where he had a son who had David. The powers of manipulation of like time and space, and he just was in a carnival around there. Like, again, that just, I forgot, it's not Nimrod, something else. But that reminded me of it. He blew up the thing. Goliath was there. He came big and small. I did like as well, they did bring up the reference that he can only go 21 feet. And he said, look, it's the end of the world. Go big or go home. And they still have the rivalry between Goliath and Hank Pym, or Lawrence Fishburne and Michael Douglas. I did love that little callback of that. Wendy Lawson is trying to understand the pod to open it. And out of nowhere, because Peter is kicking everyone's ass and not even trying, lightning bolt comes out of nowhere, Thor. And after they knocked him out, I did love the line where Peter Quill's like, oh, it's you. I was like, oh, you know, I thought you were, my name is Thor. Oh, I thought you were Van Halen. Van who? What? Okay, whatever. So knocked him out. He explains, I love that part. Thor explains that the nine realms, except for Earth, are gone. This kid has gone through realm to realm to realm, just landing there, and Ego would, you know, we don't know why, but everything's getting blown up at the moment. Bucky says, let's just kill him. Oh, well, what a surprise. The killer says, yes. But they try to explain or try to understand what to do with Peter. At the same time, Hope, with headphones on, singing You Never Surrender is just going around with Hank Pym's access pass. Just then he finds Peter. Hey, Peter. Oh, you want some headphones, whatever. Oh, my mom used to like that song. She used to. Then she finds out, like, I'm American. I was born in Missouri. Like, give me a corn dog and give me some Bruce Springsteen. I'm as American as can be. So it appeals to Hope. Hope lets him out, gives him some directions to go to Missouri, and then they leave. He leaves anyway. After they say, look, after Hope tells him, look, I will tell you where he is, but you have to make sure that you don't kill him. Because Bucky just wants to kill him. And Bucky's off the orders of Gorbachev. Gorbachev just kills everybody just because. We find out that Eagle's like, hey, what's going on? Why can't I talk to my son? You know what? I have to go to Earth myself. He goes to Vegas. And I do love this little Peggy with tanks, Goliath, T'Chaka, Thor, and just standing the line against an army of basically sand soldiers of Ego. At the same time, Hank is trying to find Peter, and Peter's at his mom's grave in Missouri. And Bucky, by orders of Gorbachev, is like, no, kill his ass, knock him out. Howard infiltrates the radio reception and tells Bucky a heartwarming speech, bringing up Steve Rogers, because again, at the time, Steve Rogers is somewhere in the Arctic frozen. They confirmed this, because Howard's like, oh, we had a shield, but it got lost in the Arctic, so you know how that goes. So that can confirm that they can bring him back. I do like that. Bucky feels bad. He doesn't shoot. How, like, Peter tells him, like I just want to stop this. This guy's in my head. Then Eagle gets mad. Eagle gets big like a mountain. Goliath says, I got to go bigger. You can't go bigger than a mountain, Goliath. I'm sorry. You just can't. They figure out where Eagle is representing himself. Hank and Peter get there. And as the storyline goes in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Ego is very just an asshole and tells Peter, yeah, I killed your mom because that's the only way I can keep doing this. And Peter, using the same way except using his powers, does basically a special beam cannon from Dragon Ball Super and just shoots Ego in the face so his corporeal form disappears. Everyone's enjoying stuff. T'Chaka's like, this is a great libation. What is this? Oh, this is light beer. Everyone's having fun. Then Thor's like, I gotta go because we killed his corporeal form, but his planet is still hovering out there. We have to avenge the one that we lost. And Hank's like, yo, you got a team. And then basically the whole football team of the Avengers come out of nowhere, which is basically the West Coast Avengers, which that's why I keep bringing it up.
Mm-hmm.
They go on an adventure to go kill Ego, which is not really fun to say when you say it like that, but eh. What was your thoughts on episode 2?
Yeah, when we go right back to where Hope takes the access pass of her father. She's running around like a child, like a curious young adolescent, just running around with the headphones, bobbing, weaving. And she sees the young kid, relates to the kid because, oh, another one person that looks like myself. She has zero care of him being a threat. It's just seeing a child. Having that conversation, and they found something in common that touched the hearts were, first of all, they like music, Walkman. Then the significance of the Walkman, memories of their late mom or their missing mom at the moment. So then he touches the heart, the strength of a child. The innocence of a child was right there between the exchange. So she, you know what? You just want to go home. And the kid was like, yeah, I just want to go home. I just want to go to Missouri. I want to, you know, go visit my mom. You know, we didn't know it was the grave. At that moment when they're talking, he just wanted to go home. She feels the touch, and that's the humanity part of the story. She goes, she lets him out, like you said. I like the fact that he goes back to Missouri, and they see that from space comes Ego. They're going to send the heavy hitters to confront and stall. They know that they cannot beat this celestial being without the other celestial being to go at it. It's like, you know, a little homage to Godzilla. You need another monsters amongst monsters. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. And to have that there with Bucky ready to take that shot and hitting, he's still hearing orders. I was a little worried, though, there when he was looking through, because with what if, it could be anything. We're all thinking the good stuff, yep. the friendly being, the, you know, happy. No, what if shows you sometimes the dark part. So I thought he was going to get his Hydra orders with the numbers, you know, with the countdown in the numeral, like we saw in the movies with the Winter Soldier. It's like, oh, they're going to turn the switch back on him. But good job on Howard. Of course, it's typical Stark faction intercepting and touching the hearts and string of Bucky. So it's telling us that in this world, there, where, like you said, Rogers is still in the ice, still maybe returning here. You mentioned about the West Coast Avengers. Maybe this is and if Rogers later down the road gets back out of the ice and he can becomes now to this timeline, maybe we'll see the White Vision. Remember, we were talking about it before, yeah, and we were saying, where would White Vision show up? Maybe this is a galaxy or a multiverse where we see a White Vision now have a purpose in this one, going up against Celestial Beings, in against Ego, as we see Quill defeats him using his own pod to attack him at that moment. I love it. I love it. I even like Thor. Thor felt like Thor from all Thor. Like he's could transfer all through all different multiverse, and it's the same Thor. You know, I kind of liked it. I liked it. Put it not kind of. I did like it, and that was a real good story for episode two. I really enjoyed it there because it showed us the Avengers getting together again, and no matter what form, what age, what year, or what timeline, the Avengers were always going to avenge because there's always chaos or evil or some type of destruction that needs to be avenged. So it shows us that in Marvel world, the Avengers, no matter who it is needed.
True. And I also want to put that out there that because Bucky changed his mind, Howard's like, you know, he left, so he's gone. And you're right, he was right now looking at the San Francisco Bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge. So again, Bucky in that universe is unwired now until someone like a Baron Mordo, not a Baron Mordo, the guy with the purple sock over his head. I forgot his name.
Zemo
comes Zemo out of nowhere, whatever. But again, this could be a totally different type of civil war once we get to that point in that universe, if they bring it back up again. So I did like that. And at the end, they show King Morgan alive. They realize, like, we have a guy that gets big. We can bring him into we can make him into Giant Man without bringing in like all these other guys, and there's a history behind it because we talked about it in Ant-Man and the Wasp. We talked about the rivalry between Hank and Goliath. We talked about the rivalry of Hank and S.H.I.E.L.D., why they don't like S.H.I.E.L.D. I do like that this universe goes on the same storyline as Civil War, so that means there's still Hydra agents in that universe. Still in there, no one knows anything because Bucky stopped being the Winter Soldier. Howard's life could be extended, or because it's kind of it could be a fixed point in life, he's going to die by something else. We don't know.
That's right. We don't know. Good point. And S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't fallen yet to Hydra yet. You know, if they stay with that canon.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. So let's go to number three, which is a very weird one. And I'm just going to put it out there because it's just, for me, it wasn't my favorites, but I will put it out there. No. What if Happy Hogan saved Christmas? On Christmas Eve, Happy Hogan is being head of security in Stark Towers, just doing his thing, having fun, but whatever. At the same time, Justin Hammer, escaped, either got out of prison or escaped from prison. And this goes on along the same storylines as Iron Man 2. He got connected with some things. He got arrested. He's in jail. This is before the Mandarin, obviously, because the Mandarin has not picked him up. So right around that time, he devises a plan to go into Stark Tower and steal something. We know what that is, but I'm not going to say what it is so far. He gets out. He hires two thugs. He breaks into the Stark's towers. He hijacks the Iron Man robots that are just running around. We see Kat Dennings' character, which I forgot what her name was, Darcy. Was there as well, interning. We find out that she's never been paid ever in her life and has more than 10 years experience in college degrees, so good for her. Everything that's happening, Happy is thinking where they're going to go to. And he overhears that Justin Hammer wants the Hulk blood. He wants to be a hero on his own terms. He wants to. And this is very, and I mean very holiday pun. So heavy in holiday puns. And I love Justin Hammer in his quirkiness and his, but just, for, okay, anyway. While getting to the labs, he finds the Hulk blood, accidentally injects himself with the Hulk blood, and is running away with a purple leg. At this point, what are your thoughts on the episode?
Yeah, watching Justin Hammer, one of the most corniest but pain in the ass or really SOB piece of crap heel for Iron Man. He just wants to be Iron Man, no matter what, no matter, he just a wannabe, no matter what. And what I've, when as the story develops, I'm like, damn, out of all the days that Jarvis decides to give the Jarvis a day off for maintenance reboot, is the day that, Avenger Towers gets infiltrated or try to seize there. It of course, it was an homage to a Christmas movie that people debate whether it's a Christmas movie or not. By the way, this episode was purposely aired on Christmas Day, so that's why it was heavy late in Christmas.
Yeah.
With it, Darcy, again, I'd like to see Kat Dennings in there. Just seeing her in different, crossing all over different platforms. We saw her in the WandaVision, now here in this, and of course, we know her from Thor. We saw her from all different pop-ups. I like that her character is very significant. You know, she was just goofy, funny, a little bit of a comedy. We're not overbearing with Darcy going and get Martino cherries, which was funny. There was also a shout out to the cop from Die Hard, as they mentioned Die Hard there with the, you know, go get the Martino cherries to Wins, to forget his real name. I know we all know him as the lovable from Urkel from Family Matters. And that was good.
They said his name too. I forgot.
They said his name. Yeah, I do apologize on that, on not remembering that guy's name, but you guys get the gist of it. I loved it. Where, bro, you got people going in there and trying to take over and trying to be a hostile takeover building. You're going to go protect this blood and you got injected. Is it really the bad thing though to be like the Incredible Hulk though? Get all, getting those powers. I mean, like, one of the two things, you know, either the super soldier serum, I wouldn't mind grabbing. And if I can't get anything with human powers, then give me an Iron Man suit. I mean, personally wise, but you know, that's the debate. But I like where we're going on right here. How is Happy going to save Christmas now? Because Justin Hammer has his thugs taking care of everybody. You see Maria Hill is trying to help out Hogan, Happy Hogan, with trying to direct traffic there, as she likes to do as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and a director. So it's good to see that point when he starts mutating, at least his leg wise. He doesn't know how strong or where the powers is going yet. So that's where we pick off from this part from the story.
Exactly. And we find out as well that Mirror Hill was there, but she got injured during the blast when Justin Hammer came in and she entrusted the security to Happy Hogan, which he took it seriously before he got injected. While he got injected, his body's turning and changing purple, by the way. And he calls Natasha. She's talking to an ex-Hydra guy who had 17 kills. No, 18 kills. The guy from Nigeria. That was taken care of. He calls Clint and Bruce. Clint has an Iron Man doll, and all the kids are like, give me, give me, give me. And he's like, Mom, my wife said if I don't bring it back, I can't come home.
And that's that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Sorry to interrupt. That's the Arnold Schwarzenegger movie with Sinbad when they're going back.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah.
Love that movie. Not that great of a movie because Sinbad was kind of a psychopath and they let him go. But still, either way, we'll talk about that another time in life. He calls Iron Man and Tony Stark. Tony Stark is dressed up as Santa Claus, and all the soccer moms are thirsting over Steve Rogers. So he's like, I gotta go. Sorry about that. And then at that moment, an explosion happens where he gets pushed back through a couple of walls, and that's where the transformation happens to completion. And he becomes the Incredible Hulk. That is an actual reference to an actual character on an actual Marvel comic. Look it up. It's really weird. As this is happening, and I was going to switch it up right now, as the part of my French, shit is about to hit the fan because now that he has the powers, and I did like how Darcy's like, you sound really Darth Vader-ish. I'm like, no, don't worry about that. Just get to Jarvis. And as she's doing this, the B story is that she's going down to Jarvis. She gets surprised by the many big towers of Jarvis. She puts in a German version called Werner, who's very nihilistic and very just sad in life. So I was like, okay, that's just whatever, that's you. And the Incredible Hulk proceeds to beat the crap out of numerous Iron Man guards, ripping it apart. And that by far is the best part of the episode for me, ladies and gentlemen, because the one rule in cinema is that we can't show bodies, but we can show robots. That's all that matters. So they started doing that. And I did love that. At the time, the main fight happens. The Incredible Hulk versus Justin Hammer. Justin Hammer realizes he's going to lose. So he goes down to the armory, gets the Hulkbuster, comes back, and it's Hulkbuster versus the Incredible Hulk. And I did like this match because back and forth they were going, but Happy knows how to fight. He's the head of security, and Hammer is just a guy in a suit. That's the big difference. You can have a Hulkbuster suit, but if you don't know how to fight, the end result, as we see here, Hulkbuster just annihilates. Sorry. The Incredible Hulk annihilates the Hulkbuster and just rips it apart like a rag doll. Then all the Avengers like, what the hell is that guy doing to my suit? And then I like that the whole doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. They did it and beat the crap out of the Hulk for about 10 seconds. Natasha shoots a stun dart. Darcy comes in and says he's on the guest list. Her immediate thought is to shoot another dart just because. It's like, oh, it's me. It's Happy. And they're all like, oh, it's Happy. It's all good. The part that I did love is that Hammer with one arm is like, is that Justin Hammer wearing my armor? He's like, no. And like I said, you can have the armor, but if the guy, all Iron Man has to do is this.
I know.
And everything just came off. I'm like, you did that for nothing, because that means you could have left. The plan was successful. Iron Man would have heard about it. Boop. And then you would have either fell in the sky. But I digress. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
They arrest him. They go back to jail. Happy Hogan's like, you know, I'm glad you're safe. You know, you're my head of security. Happy Hogan's like, they call him Hulk Hogan too, which I do love that reference.
Yeah, they did.
I did also like that while the Avengers are fighting the Incredible Hulk, he tells Bruce, come on in. Bruce is like, no, I'm good. I'm just eating my cookie here. I'm not going to get into this yet. And I love that. Like, I don't have to get into this. This is how you guys treat me. Fuck you guys. I'm out of this. I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to help. I'm going to go you. So in the end, Happy Hogan's like, you can't cure me, right? Oh, they don't want to answer that they can cure him or not. And at the last second, Thor comes in because they ask, like, where the hell is Thor? Oh, happy Christmas. Oh, I came late. And the Watcher
came late to the party.
So what are your thoughts on the episode, Mr. Kevin, at the end?
No, I love it because we there was a lot of Easter eggs with Die Hard, where first of all, when Happy's trying to go get the Hulk blood that I forgot to mention in the first set scene, when he's climbing through the duct, through the ventilation and the duct like Bruce Willis, when he finally hits the release to get out of the suit, he's falling down like the villain in Die Hard. You know, you see even the dramatic pause when he's falling down and Happy grabs him and saves him, you know, from falling to a demise there. He wants to know. And then funny when Happy Hogan says, am I going to turn back to normal? And then it just ends. I was like, to be continued. And then of course, Thor is just that, you know, I thought Thor was going to say, man, are you Puerto Rican? I'm running. I came to the party late. I'm like, he's like, llegué tarde. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, I see people sweeping and mopping, but no, that was funny though. This was a really fun episode. If you enjoy Die Hard, if you're an older person or not old, you know, has seen the movies and know about the history of Die Hard and all that, this was right to your alley with cinematic for Christmas. Really good Christmas episode. Would it translate well in June? In July, maybe not, but this is going to be a special Christmas one because it's Christmas time where, you know, if all the Die Hard references, it gets you in the Christmas spirit. I enjoyed it. I still want to know if they return to this, is it going to be the Incredible Hulk, or has it returned to Happy Hogan? That's where we're left off there. And I really liked seeing, again, the other complimentary Maria Hill, Kat Dennings as Marcy, even Justin Hammer for a bit there was corny, but we know that he's existing in this, and he's still after the secret of the Lucky Charms here of what's Iron Man. So, you know, good episode.
It was a good episode. Like I said, it was. Like, I didn't really like the over. Again, it was Christmas Day. I get that. And with the overexertion of Christmas was part of it all. I get that. But then if you watch it in March, you're like, okay, this is too damn much.
Exactly.
That's why this should have been a balance. Like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But again, I did forget about the Die Hard reference where he was falling off. That I did like that. But I really would have wished they would have done the hands all messed up. Like in the original Die Hard, so it looks all weird when he's falling down. That's again a nice little Easter egg. You're like, oh, why did I do that? And the watch is like, well, I really like the Die Hard movies. I just wanted to put that in. Okay, let's fix this. But The fight was cool. They're starting to give you a nice little feel of what's happening on the show. A lot of more graphic stuff, a lot of more in-depth in one and two, but then they can be goofy in three. This was a very goofy episode, ladies and gentlemen. This was not.
It was.
No high stakes beyond just being goofy. So what coming in 4, 5, and 6, we'll get to that when we get to that. What are your final thoughts as a whole for all three episodes, Mr. Kevin?
Well, watching all three episodes, it was all different. You had the mystery drama or the mystery detective in episode one. You had a come together moment of what could happen, you know, makes you want to think. An episode that makes you want to think, like we mentioned, like we broke down Captain America's existence, West Coast Avenger, Vision. We had so many questions and so many avenues that we could bring into that episode. They're like, whoa, we got a lot to talk out of. They gave us a lot of talking points, a lot of references, a lot of multiverse or theories that came out of that episode two. And then episode three was just a feel-good Christmas for the event. At that moment, not to overthink. Remember, there's nothing much going on. If you're not a sports fan, you're not watching sports on Christmas Day. You watch this with the kiddos. It was safe. It felt good. It was Christmas. It meant for that point of time and that time on purpose. And it gave you. And of course, for the kiddos, is the animation, the Thor, the cartoons. But for us adults, it was the diehard references to get back to it and bring you in. So they were trying to hit a demographic with a little bit of everybody in that episode three. All in all, it's not copy, repeat, similar thing where, good guy win, bad guy. All three episodes gave you a different flavor, and that's what you got to appreciate of What If. It's giving you a variation of a little bit of something, because then, you know what? That's what gets you invested, because now you want to see episode 4, 5, and 6. What's next? What they're going to touch, what topics and what point of my Marvel fandom watch are they going to intrigue, indulge me? And that's, you know what, if this show is doing that with three episodes in, they're doing something positive or doing something well, which is going to increase the viewership and want to watch it more.
That is true. And I'm actually happy that, again, in the first three episodes of season one, it was a little rough, a little slow. We were getting into it. Now with these three episodes of season two, like, we know it's going to be drama, there was going to be more Avengers 80. Now it's going to be Happy Hogan. And now 4, 5, and 6, and ladies and gentlemen, we have seen it. We'll talk about that when we get there. It's going to be very bumpy, very cryy, but very inspirational. I want to give a special thanks of an honor and privilege for you passing by again to this wonderful day and this wonderful episode. I think if we can, Saturday will be 4, 5, and 6. If that's okay, it works for me. Okay, Saturday at 4:30.
Episode I know four, earlier. I have to be earlier. I have a okay. Sorry, I apologize. We'll talk about it out there.
Oh, we'll talk about it there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll tell you when we tell you. Stay healthy, stay happy. Remember, this is What If season two, episode 1.1, 2, and 3 episode review, because obviously we want to talk about that. Coming soon, we'll get when we get there. And remember, be good, be well. And remember, I'm a crazy son of a bitch, but I love life.
And may the sports be with you.